Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and joining me now is WNYC's Bob Henley on two local stories with larger implications: the failed plot to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank in Lower Manhattan, and Mayor Bloomberg's new super PAC aimed at the issue of guns and launched just weeks before the election. Hey, Bob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
First, give us the latest on the FBI sting that led to charges that this 21-year-old Bangladeshi man, Kazim Hafiz, conspired to use weapons of mass destruction, that's actually in the charge,
right,
and provided material support to Al-Qaeda in his attempt to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank.
Well, buried in the 20-some-odd page criminal complaint that came out right after Hafiz was taken into custody was a reference to a co-conspirator, not identified. Then yesterday, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly did disclose that Howard Willie Carter II was arrested by FBI agents out in California and San Diego.
A second guy,
but on charges related to child pornography, not terrorism charges. There is also reference in the criminal complaint to an individual in Bangladesh who was apparently also involved in the social media network. And that, I think that's what's important to understand here. This case has been made through Facebook, Twitter, and the internet as much as with direct interaction.
So I don't understand yet the relationship between the other suspect, Howard Willie Carter II, and Hafiz, if all he was charged with was child pornography.
Well, let's lay out exactly what the narrative with Hafiz, because the reporting has been that this is, in the Times, made reference to past cases, like up in Newburgh, where an FBI informant went out and got involved with organizing or appeared to facilitate a terrorist cell. And at that time, even though the government was successful in making their case, there was a lot of criticism that this was so-called entrapment. So I think the key question is, how is this different from that in the sense of how Hafiz's case played out? What we see here is that it is clear that he came into the United States on a student visa in January of this year. And according to the FBI and Police Commissioner Kelly, under the pretext of basically doing some kind of terrorist act, even targeting an as yet undisclosed high-ranking U.S. official, even trying to bring the election to a standstill. And then what's different about this case, if this criminal complaint is accurate, is that at that point, Hafiz, through the internet, was trying to recruit potential members of a cell. So he actually was approached the CI, and that's very different to have him set into motion the things. And then throughout the period of time that he's on interacting with the FBI, at one point an FBI agent undercover gets involved. At one point in the interaction in the chatter in cyberspace, there's a discussion that, well, perhaps have you thought, this is to Hafiz, that what you're doing is a violation of the Quran because you're coming into a country that offered you a visa, mm-hmm, and you're planning to make a violent jihad.
Yes.
And then Hafiz says, no, I've contacted my source in Bangladesh and I've been cleared for this operation. So it's a little different than what we saw in Newburgh.
And here is Police Commissioner Kelly on that question of what constitutes entrapment.
And if you draw intent to do a crime, and somehow there are means made available, then generally speaking, the entrapment defense does not succeed.
Commissioner Kelly, by the way, if you want to call up and talk to Bob Henley about this case or about Mayor Bloomberg's anti-gun super PAC that he just launched this week that he hopes will impact some of the elections around the country, you can call and talk on the air, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Always good to have Bob Henley's reporting. You know what I'm curious about? Did anybody find out from Hafiz, assuming the allegations are true, Why the Federal Reserve Bank? And honestly, when I first heard what the target was, before I heard who the suspect was, I thought, oh, is this kind of some kind of right-wing nut? Is this another Timothy McVeigh? Because it's the Ron Paul folks, it's the Tea Party folks who are always agitating against the Federal Reserve. But no, it turns out to be...
Well, it harkens back to ragtime even, the 19th century, the idea of radicalism directed at the banks. I think that, first of all, it's important to understand that all we really know right now is the government's complaint and version of the facts. In the past, one of the problems has been that the individuals who are working for the government as confidential informants usually have some kind of duress hanging over them, whether it be some kind of immigration issue or some kind of criminal thing. So
the
we don't know yet. We don't know about that.
Quality of the information. But there was one report I heard said he actually had established the New York Stock Exchange as his initial target.
And it was too secure. And his feeling was that it
couldn't do it.
Right. And also, there was a lot of reference in the government's representation of the narrative where Nafees was talking about being in sympathy with al-Qaeda and wanting to follow up on hitting the American economy. And I think there's some sense out there that in some degree what happened in the World Trade Center, bringing down those towers and the economic things that happened since, the wars overseas that have put the U.S. in the red, that to some degree people and sympathizing with al-Qaeda believe that they are part and parcel of what's happening right now in terms of the world's financial order.
And why did the FBI let the plot play out to the very end like this? They went so far as to provide Nafees with bogus chemicals for a 1,000-pound bomb and watched as he called that cell phone detonator. Is it because they wanted to be able to make sure he'd be charged with the most serious of charges? Or why did it get that
far?
Well,
there was a lot of things that went on in the interim, particularly through July. There were meetings in Central Park. At one point, Nafees said he wanted to return back to Bangladesh prior to following out on this plan. His government handlers basically said, don't do that because then you'll get on the radar of the government. Then they facilitated him shifting from a suicide bomb attack to one where he could do it via remote control. And the idea here is the government is trying to get as many overt acts piled up. And again, the public was never in any jeopardy here in the sense that this was all like Hollywood material. So every time that he pushes the cell phone, calls the cell phone to try to detonate that half-ton fall bomb in front of the Federal Reserve, that's going to add up in terms of the jury's sense of his guilt.
And I guess if they took it that far also, he could be put away for life now. Under these charges if he's convicted.
I am interested to see what happens on the Bangladeshi side also because we still have this one other individual that is supposedly in country there who was providing emotional support. And here's the other thing, too. There's a whole question of to what degree is social interaction on the internet between individuals protected in terms of our basic liberties versus at what point does it step over the line and become something that is criminal in nature.
And Nafees was here on a legit student visa. He was supposedly attending Southeast Missouri State University, but he couldn't have been in class much. Shouldn't his absence have raised a red flag, or do we need to keep that kind of, that kind of track of people here on student visas?
Well, it does raise an interesting question. He was attending Southeast Missouri State University in the spring and then transferred to ASA Institute of Business and Computer Technology in Brooklyn. Senator Schumer yesterday threw a spotlight on something. You know, oddly enough, it's incredible. 10 years after 9/11, apparently there are these, and this is not in this case. This state school in Missouri is not accused of this, but there are so-called visa mills. One was just shut down just a couple of months ago in California, where the school, which is not doesn't have any kind of education program, was selling these education visas for $5,000 a copy, and so people would get this so-called sham visa. And in this case, it involved 1,500 individuals. So apparently, also what's happened is DHS has only checked a fraction of the schools. There's some 10,000 institutions that are entitled to participate in this program. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of students. Even the flight schools, which got so much attention in 9/11, have not been followed up on.
Although, who's to say any more scrutiny on his visa application would have revealed terrorist intentions?
Well, what Schumer has asked for, apparently when you transfer from one school to another and move location, that's supposed to trigger some kind of follow-up by DHS. Mm-hmm. Schumer has asked for an inspector general review of that.
All right, Bob Henley with us. Let's move on to Mayor Bloomberg's new super PAC called Independence USA PAC. He's committed to spend between $10 and $15 million just in these last couple of weeks now before the election. Where's the money going?
Well, of course, it means that Howard Wolfson, who's his right-hand man, is going to take a temporary leave of absence and run this. The mayor's hoping that in the last couple of weeks he can make a difference. For instance, up in the 25th district, up in the Syracuse district, the number may have changed. Dan Maffei is in a tough race for mayor. He lost to Republican Emory Burkle in 2010. He was one of those, I think, three or four Democrats who got hit hard in the Tea Party tsunami in 2010. So the mayor hopes to make a difference in that race. This money will go to direct mail. It'll go to internet ads, TV, and radio. Then also, the mayor is pivoting to support Maine Independent Senate candidate Angus King. And also, he's putting money into states like Maine and Maryland, Minnesota, where there's legalizing same-sex ballot questions. So he's hoping at the last moment here that he can try to, you know, have an impact. And there's no doubt. I mean, Maffei last time lost by just a few hundred votes, even though he outspent Burkle 3-1.
So this new super PAC from Bloomberg is to support gun control, to support legal same-sex marriage, and to support education, meaning his style of education reform.
I think also, I think it's dispositionally to support political figures who have committed to bipartisanship, the idea of collaboration and working together. It's kind of Bloomberg's pragmatism, if you will. We know that he did this with the mayors against illegal guns, plowed in some $3 million there. There's also the $1 million more locally to the New York State Senate Republican campaign to help them hold on to the very thin majority.
He hasn't inserted himself in races around the country in this way before. So is this a preview of what we can expect after his reign as mayor?
Well, I think that, with Citizens United and the new landscape, money's more important than ever. And certainly the mayor has, with some $25 billion, almost an unlimited amount to work his political will. I think also he has been trying to pull together this concept of this independence mindset, this idea of trying to get post-partisanship, and he'll have more time in his hands to try to do that.
Would anything that he does with this super PAC wind up tipping his hand as to who he's going to vote for president? Because Bloomberg has said previously that he's made up his mind who he's going to vote for, but he will never say.
Well, I think the mayor of New York has to deal with the person that is elected president. So it doesn't make sense for him to throw his weight one way or the other, especially in New York, where I don't think there's any sense practically that it would have an impact. And for instance, if you threw it to Romney, I don't think they say, oh, OK, we're going to vote for Romney and switch New York. And so that's the thing about, Michael Bloomberg, is the pragmatism. If it's not going to do any good and have any practical effect, he doesn't bother with it.
Will this PAC live on after the election?
Well, I would imagine in some iteration.
He says it will, and I guess he would fund it entirely on his own, or would he team up with other independent-minded individuals with money?
This is a hypothetical. I think he likes to keep it very much close within his control. I mean, I don't think that sometimes, though, it can act as a kind of synergy. Once Bloomberg's money gets in the mix, there are other folks that might be inclined to join in.
Robert in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Bob Henley. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Brian and Mr. Henley. You know, the third Die Hard movie.
He's Mr. Henley. I'm Brian. Go ahead.
Okay, of all things, was an attack on the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And the Jeremy Irons character was a former East German intelligence operative, was also a terrorist, and there were other terrorists involved. It's art imitating life, life imitating art. How does anybody know, do the sources of law enforcement think that this guy got this idea perhaps from the movie? I mean, this is a lone wolf guy, and he's a kid, according to the news accounts. I mean, we have an example of somebody attacking, of all things, the Federal Reserve Bank. I mean, who would think to attack the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, of all structures?
So maybe he got it from the third Die Hard movie. Maybe the director of the movie should be charged with material support for
really
Al-Qaeda.
I'm really glad the caller referenced the age of the individual. And I think that, and there's some very good reporting in the
Daily
News.
Which is what again?
21. And, you know, there's some very good reporting in the Daily News about the family really taken aback by this. And I think there's something that's going on here in that, and I date myself, 20 years ago, if you were a parent, there wasn't a parallel emotional universe where your kids and young adults could hang out called cyberspace. And so it was easier to take account of them, to engage them. And what we're seeing now, whether it be Columbine or whether it be this case, it's possible for young people to have an entire social sphere and interaction that their parents have no idea about. And so it really, I think, cries out for a kind of parental engagement with this technology that really isn't being discussed.
And I guess if people want to have sympathy for him, you could say, here's a 21-year-old kid who got jihad in his head, wound up, you know, launching an undoable plot and got caught and could be put away for the rest of his life.
Well, I think, though, that on the other hand, actions need to have consequences.
Right.
And there's clearly
something – that's the dilemma.
Something is going on here where – there is, despite President Obama's efforts to engage the Muslim world, this narrative continues to go on, that somehow by having this kind of that it can be a redemptive act to have this kind of we call it terror, they call it liberation, even if it kills women and children. And that disconnect, I mean, quite frankly, Brian, I don't think there's enough drones in the world to kill all the potential 21-year-olds. So there needs to be a discussion about how we deal with that counter-narrative.
One more call. Schumann in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Schumann, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, you're on baby duty, huh?
Yeah, I am. You can hear him?
Yeah.
All right, I'll try to keep him quiet.
It's okay, go
no,
ahead.
No, please.
I just want to ask if you guys have a sense of the reaction in the Bangladeshi community in New York. And the background is I grew up in the U.S., but my father was actually born in what was then British East Bengal and then moved to West Bengal in India. But the point is, in my neighborhood, there's a lot of Bangladeshis that I get to practice my parents' language with in Kensington and Brooklyn. I've seen Queens. I didn't even know there's a community in Jamaica, but obviously in Jackson Heights and Astoria in the Bronx. And it's a huge community, and so just kind of wondering.
What's your sense of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, what is your sense?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to the people on my block this week, but I suspect there's a lot of dismay. I think Bangladesh in general has traditionally not been a place of very hardcore Islamism. But that may be changing with this generation and what you're talking about with cyberspace and so on. So, yeah, I'll talk to my neighbors. There's a mosque in our neighborhood. I'm kind of curious to see what they're thinking.
I mean, to your point, one of the things that, you know, the Bangladeshi community is a real big part of the civil service in New York City. I mean, they have tremendous clout within the police department. They pretty much, in terms of the traffic police, are you know, very dominant there. So I think that there's an Islamic Officers Association within the police department. So it seems to be, and again, we can't generalize a successful integration in the New York narrative.
We leave it there with Bob Henley. Many questions answered, some yet to be answered. It is the nature of life
right. And
the nature of uncertainty, which we actually allow into our conversations here on this show.
And the sound of children in the background.
That's right. Mayor Bloomberg's new super PAC and, of course, the alleged attempted attack on the Federal Reserve Bank downtown, as reported on by Bob. Bob, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Our next guest, not running for president for the first time since 1988, Ralph Nader. Stay with us.